Well, how are you guys? What's new?
I'm doing okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Doing okay. Doing okay.
Those are two very different okays. So we have David's okay that's like smiling, bobbing the head. Yeah, I'm okay. I'm good. And then Jimmy that's like hanging his head a little bit, keeping his mouth
that's
closed.
That's just I'm covering up my double chin because now that we're filming, it'll be printed. Okay. No, I'm okay. I honestly, somebody sent me a thing about somebody doing something that they only have the ability to use their feet, and I just said, you know, was this the message? It was a positive message to somebody that only has feet, and they seem to be born that way, so they don't know anything better. But and I messaged back saying, being able body is winning, in general. You know, being able body is just like. There, but for the grace of God, go I, right? It's just like, it's crazy. It's, and you know, the older we get, the more you value just being able to get up and move around and be healthy.
My mood is directly,
take that for granted.
My mood is directly affected by what I'm working on that particular week or month. Like, I just finished up something that was really satisfying. So I'm like, everything is great. You know, the shop is coming along. Everything just feels really good. I don't care about analytics right now or whatever. Everything just feels great. And then next week, I'll probably have to work on something I don't want to work on. I'm like, this is stupid. This is this is the end.
Why do I do this to myself?
Why do I do this?
Yeah.
My friend sent me a message. I said, how are you? And he's having really complicated health issues. And I didn't. He sent me everything that was horrible, and I didn't know what to say back. I just said, "Well, at least you're on the right side of the grass." Mm. That's what I wrote back, and he sent back a smiley emoji. But sometimes that's how you have to really just assess things. As long as you're on the right side of the grass.
Yeah, it is kind of a cliche thing to say, but gratitude I've found this in the last couple of years. Gratitude in even the smallest ways is much bigger than the negative stuff in the same situation. So like if you have piles of hardship, just a little bit of gratitude has a bigger effect, at least on me, on my attitude and on my heart and just the way that I think about life and stuff. So when I've been going through hard stuff in the last couple of years, just taking a minute to try to get over myself and think about something that I have that I don't deserve, which is pretty much everything, that little bit of gratitude can really shift your perspective. And it doesn't make the hard stuff go away, of course, but it can really pull you out of the kind of downward spiral of like, well, this is bad, and this is bad, and this is hard, and that makes this hard, and you know, it's very easy to fall into. So
we went right into a seminar.
Remembering that you have limbs that work, and not everybody does, and that you didn't do anything to deserve those limbs, like that's pretty profound, you know, when you're having a hard time. But thank you for coming to our TED Talk. We will see you next week on the Making It Self Improvement Podcast. Just kidding.
Yeah,
it is a good thing to remember, though, for sure.
For sure.
I saw this video, and it's going to be my pick at the end. But and I sent it to you guys yesterday, and it's called Get Over Yourself.
It's good.
This guy named Bo Miles. And it was one of those, you should watch it. Anybody should watch it, but especially creators. Because it really does, it's a video about somebody taking a moment to step outside of their own burnout situation and just like get some perspective. And watching him do that gave me a moment of that yesterday, and I thought that was really cool. It's a good video, but we can talk about it more later if you want to. David, you said you've been working on something. You're excited. You're smiling a lot. You said you've been working on something. So what have you been doing that has made you feel that way?
I think I mentioned it last week, but we finished up the mobile table saw station for the budget shop. So we took a little contractor saw and made this, just made it into the title of last week's show, the big boy saw, and I bought another mobile base for one of the other tools, so that other shop doesn't feel like such a chore to use now, because before nothing was in place, and to do anything over there was a full like 45 minutes of moving things around and getting things ready. Now it's only 10 minutes of moving things around. I still got to back a car out. I still have to pull out tools. Yeah. It's a big improvement. And then as things were starting to come together, I was like, there's still a little bit of friction to use the shop, but it's so much better. And I decided to make another video on my fancy shop compared to my garage shop. And so I'm finishing up that edit now. So I've actually got two videos coming out within the next week. And it's just, we go back and forth between the two shops comparing, like, this is what's amazing about this shop and this is what sucks about this shop. This, you know, like, why having a bigger table saw or why having more spaces? I mean, it's obvious why having these things are valuable, but it's cool to see the contrast. Because I think I have the unique perspective of having a big fancy shop, but then going backwards and setting up a tiny little one-car garage shop. And so we're finishing up that video right now.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah, oddly enough, I'm going through, I mean, we talked about it, compressing my wood shop a little bit. And I still have the same stuff, so it's not the same situation because I'm not, like, downgrading the tools specifically. But compressing the space and having to rethink it a little bit for a smaller area it was actually kind of fun. It was actually kind of cool to, yes, I can do the same thing in the smaller area. Of course I can, you know. Not like I have to have a certain thing or a certain area, so.
I also, last night, so maybe 6 months ago, 5 months ago, I got another CNC and a plasma cutter for the CNC. It's a whole thing Stepcraft has, and I got this months ago, and I started to put it together, and then I just got, well, they have a manual, and their manuals are really good on step-by-step. But then they put out a video series of also how to get it all set up. And so I started watching the video series, and then the video series wasn't done. So I stopped assembling the thing where the video stopped. And then
from the factory.
Yeah. And so that I lost my momentum of putting it all together. And so then it just got pushed aside. Then they finished the video series, and it's just taken me months to get back into the groove of finishing it put together. Cause it looked like there was just so many other pieces. And I was just like, this is going to take forever. I'll just set it aside. And so last night I'm like, I'm going to finish putting together the CNC plasma cutter. And it turns out all those extra pieces was for other things if you wanted to use the CNC as a wood carving machine. And it took
additional accessories.
Yeah, it took like 45 minutes to finish putting the stupid thing together, and it's been sitting in this state for months.
You were at like step 9 of 10 the whole time.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah, it just looked like there was so much more work to do. And so now I'm waiting on I need an Ethernet to USB adapter, so that's coming in the mail today, so I can hook this thing up to the computer. I also have to swap out the 220 volt. I don't know my electrical terms. The plug, it has a different configuration, and so yeah. I got that recently, and I just gotta cut the power and switch that out. And I should be plasma cutting metal on a CNC machine here real soon.
Cool.
That'll be fun. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. So I've been looking at bending brakes, which one to get, and I think Eastwood has the one that I want. That's not too big, but usable.
What are your plans with that? With those two things together, do you have stuff in mind?
Yeah. So, one of the first things that I want to do is I'm creating. This is so nerdy. I'm creating a groove box station, like for music, with different rack mountable analog synths and a sampler drum machine. And so it's almost going to have like this arcade style, and it's all going to be connected together in a sequencer. And typically you would just take these things and you would rack mount them in a rack, but I'm going to reface. I'm going to cut all the metal faces. So all these different, so there's going to be three different of these scents, and they look, they're from three different brands, but I want to make this uniform look so like it's all one piece. And that's one of the first things that I want to do. I also have a VCR that I got that I want to reface. I want to do like wooden sides, but then recut the metal face. So these are things that I want to do with the plasma cutters, cutting thin sheet metal and refacing wow. things. Yeah.
So Jimmy, you have experience here with the sheet metal. How much detail is he going to be able to get in sheet metal with the plasma cutter?
You can get really fine cuts if you use thin, thin stuff.
Really?
It's the thicker stuff, the focus tends to go away a little bit gotcha. When you're making sharp corners and stuff.
That is my fear of, I can't find a lot of information on cutting really thin metal with a plasma cutter. Like everything,
super easy. I
mean, it's super easy. It's going to leave a clean cut?
Yeah. It should, yeah. I mean, you just got to get your dial and your stuff right. But when mm-hmm. it comes to thicker metal, when you're cutting, say, for instance, 3/8 of an inch, you're going to leave a lot of slag behind because you're removing like all that depth. And it leaves a lot of goo on both sides of the cut. But when you're only cutting, say, 20 gauge or 18 gauge, it flies through it. Hmm. Flies. Hmm. But when it comes down to like tiny little, it all depends on also the nozzle on your cutter, if you have the right, if you have the appropriate amount of, what is it? Wattage. I don't know. What do they call it? Like when the thing has a certain amount of watt. I'm just having a brain fart. An 80 watt. I'm trying to think if it's volts or watts.
Maybe anyway, voltage, probably.
Yeah, so you're going to use less voltage for something thinner. You can make sure you have the appropriate tip for your cutter. Hmm. There's a range. Like, I know in the FlexCut 80, which is what I have, when you're cutting up to 80, there's this tip. When you're cutting between up to 60, there's this tip. And when you're cutting up to 40, which would be the thinnest, you have a different tip. So you got to make sure you have the right tip in the gun so that you'll get that fine, fine cut that you're looking for.
Gotcha.
And every brand is different. This is a Lincoln, so...
Hmm. And then
I'm pretty sure the rules apply.
In my research for bending brakes, Bob had an old video come up that I watched. You made a bending brake.
Yeah.
And at first I thought I was going to make one because everything either seemed too big or too small. But then I found the one on Eastwood that has the different size fingers. I'm not sure what the terminology is. So you can...
That would be a box brake. Okay. Flip them around, bend up a side.
So I think I'm going to go with that.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. That'll be fun.
You got to just see what since you're going to be in thin, you're going to be in like the thin range, you should be okay. But most bending brakes will only handle like 20 gauge. Mm-hmm. You know, small ones that you would be able to get in the mail just because of the stoutness of them. So you just got to make sure that you, whatever you're cutting and what you're bending is obviously going to work together.
Yeah. Cool. No, that's exciting. That's like, I feel like that's a new place to go for you.
It's a whole new thing, and I got a program called SheetCam. I'm not familiar with it at all, but it's something else I gotta learn, I guess.
It's pretty simple.
It's like probably like Illustrator with like just straight flat cuts. It's like 2D CNC, it's all it is.
Okay.
Yeah, I've only used it a couple of times for my plasma, but it's pretty straightforward. So cool. Well, Jimmy, what have you been doing?
I successfully made my bucket that I talked about last week, and that's a fun video, and the video's doing well, getting some really nice comments on that. And I don't mean to call you out, Dave, but you said there's a conversation about my table saw usage in that video.
Yes. So
where is that conversation? And I didn't ask you before we started, but I'll ask you now. Are people roasting me, or what are they saying?
So I actually brought it up over on my Discord. I'm like,
it's his
because I knew it would be a great conversation. I'm like, I pretended like it was all secret. I'm like, just between you and I, what do you guys think about Jimmy's freehand cutting on the table saw? And then people were like, oh my god, I would never do that. Nothing bad is said. It was just kind of like, it's unknown territory for most people, including myself. Yeah.
Well, it's
well, explain what honest, the deal guys, is for somebody that yeah. anybody that hasn't seen.
Oh, yeah. So I freehand cut straight lines on the table, so which I've done for a really long time. But I've actually even freehand cut a circle just to show you, because it's just a bunch of straight cuts when you get down to it. I wouldn't do it if there was an arriving knife. And to be honest, it's like you see a lot of boat builders do it because sometimes you have a fair curve. And I've actually cut curves on the really long, shallow curves. As long as there's a arriving knife on the thing, I wouldn't do it without it because having the arriving knife there prevents the kickback on the back of the blade because the front of the blade's coming down at 10,000 RPMs and the back of the blade's going up at 10,000 RPMs. So as soon as you get past the mandrel, anything on the back of the blade will shoot up in the air. But if there's a arriving knife, the arriving knife keeps that from happening. So if you're going to freehand cuts at your own risk, I'm not telling you you should do it. But if you're going to ride a motorcycle, wear a helmet. If you're going to ride a motorcycle, wear a arriving knife. That's all I'm going to say. I didn't say anything. Yeah, if you're going to ride a motorcycle, wear a arriving knife. And if you're going to do wheelies, I should say. If you're going to do wheelies, wear a arriving knife. So I just freehand cut a long, shallow angle that would have been a setup. So it would have been a pain to take the time to set it up. And I was like, I could do this, just stay out of the way. If it goes bananas, just, you know, I have reflexes like a cat. I could jump out of the way when the blade is spinning. I know I can jump out of the way because I've done it before. I'm kidding. No, don't do what I do. But that video is doing okay, and it's fun, and I learned a tremendous amount on that when it comes to blacksmithing. I really thought that I was going to have to take this band and hammer one side of the band so the band would ultimately kind of go like, if you've ever seen a coffee cup, if you ever cut open a coffee cup, what that flat pattern looks like. Now imagine the coffee cup is 1 inch high and the coffee cup is 30 inches around. And then, so I thought I would have had to make that band and hammer it to this long arching curve. And then just experimenting, I said, let me just weld the band together. So now I have a band that's straight that won't fit on this tapered structure. But if I take it out to the power hammer and just force that angle in it by holding the ring askew as it went through the dies. And that worked perfectly. And even a couple people commented, like, I never would have expected that to work. And I said, I didn't either. I just tried it. And I expected it fully not to be, I figured it was just going to make a mess of the ring. But just consistent increments through the dies, and it worked out nearly perfect. And it took just 5 minutes to do it right. Which I expected to be hammering all evening, trying to get that taper and the flat piece unwelded, unbent up piece. So I learned a lot that way. And, you know, when you get into these things, the only way to really learn and figure it out is just go into it blind, have like a vague idea what might work, and then work your way through the dark until you find what works. And then you go, wow, okay, I didn't expect that to happen. But now I know, now I'm that much smarter. Go ahead, Nick.
Do you get nervous or anxious when you're filming something for a video about doing something that you don't know is going to work?
Yes, but I always make sure that I could either do it twice. There was two rings, and in this video, I was like, I got to make the first one. Once I make the first one, I'll know better how to make the second one. I even said that in the video. But sometimes when there's multiples to do, and if I completely mess up, I screw up one, I'll just put that aside and learn what I learned from that, and then do the second task differently, and then if that's successful, I'll only put that in the video. But now, new Jimmy is putting all his mistakes in.
New Jimmy.
New, I like 2024 Jimmy. Jimmy's putting in all his mistakes and trying to show the full experience, just to change things up, to reinvent myself a little bit. And I'm getting a positive response. You know, I've only seen one or two comments where it's like, I missed the fast stuff. But for the most part, everybody's like, this is cool. I like seeing you behind the scenes and talking. And the reason I always reserve talking in public, because I was always giving that to the Patreon. So I never talked to my videos in public, only rarely. And now every video is a free form. I could do what I want. I could talk in public and do whatever I want, because I was basically putting that other stuff behind a paywall. But now behind the paywall, I'm just doing all kinds of fun stuff, a lot of behind the scenes stuff. So now I feel like I've been liberated in a way by not just exclusively putting talking in videos behind paywalls. I do them whatever works with the video, and there's certainly plenty of behind the scenes stuff to show on Patreon.
Well, now you're coasting.
So, yeah, I'm coasting, right?
Yeah.
It's a callback to what we're going to talk about. But so another exciting thing this week is I bought a Vandercook press. Did you guys happen to see that reel me and Rob did? I bought it's like a 1950 something Vandercook press, which is a proof press, and I can print 19 by 25 piece of paper on it. And it's these like old school, you see like the drum just rolling and the paper comes out printed on the other side. It's nice to be in my shop where I could take, like, the guy who dropped it off is a great guy, and we were talking, and he's like, you know, you can get plates made here, you can get plates made there. And in my mind, I'm just like, I'm just going to make plates myself on the laser cutter. And so the first night I got the thing, I cut a plate. Just, I made this little collage of phrases, just something I made a long time ago, but I refined it. And so I printed that. Those are going to be available to the patrons only. And then I have a few other poster ideas that I'm going to make public for everybody. And that was a lot of fun. So that's kind of renewed my interest in printing, is just kicking the dust off of the old machines and then getting this new machine. And then yesterday, because of that reel that I put out, I got a message from a college up here, and this guy Andrew, very nice guy, we've been chatting all week. Tomorrow I'm going to look at a 1900, or it's probably a 1880s Washington hand press that I'm probably going to buy. And that's if you guys don't know what a hand press is, it kind of goes back to like the original print press by Gutenberg, where it's a corkscrew thing where you turn the corkscrew and the big plate comes down and presses the type. But every print you do, you have to by hand roller it and then stick it in and then pull the lever and then pull it out. And so the hand presses were popular from about the 1820s to about 1880s. And I have a Washington hand press that's sitting in my yard, but it's missing all the parts. I bought it from a junkyard, and it's this thing, guys. I'm showing you guys. That's the Washington hand press. That's the one I own. Mm-hmm. That was made in the 1860s, just before the Civil War. But it's missing a large part to make it work, which is something I always thought that I would fabricate. But now I'm going to probably get this one. You see that Washington hand press? It's fully functioning. It's at a college up here. And they gave it to me for a really good price, considering how much these things usually go for. And we haven't negotiated a final price yet, but the range that they're in is much lower than what I would have expected. It's at least half of what I found online. But they just wanted to go to a good home. They said, if I don't take it, it's just going to go in storage. And he said, it's probably going to get thrown out in 5 years because nobody knows what it is and nobody cares what it is. Anyway, so that's a Washington hand press I'm excited to possibly get. And so that's my renewed interest in printing is exciting.
I have a question about that.
Yeah.
About that press in particular. So I know that you like printing as a hobby, as a task, as an action to do. But the other ones, the other presses that you have, I feel like would be a lot more productive for making things to sell than that one. That one seems like,
sure,
the way that you describe it, seems like it would be a lot more labor intensive. So is that...
Yeah, I'm going backwards in time. Yeah, definitely.
I mean, so what's the thinking there? Are you going to use it for making things to sell, or is it a set dressing piece, or like what's the goal with it?
Good question. Two things. It's really more of a historical... It's more of my interest in the historical aspect of it, and it's cool, gotcha, and I can preserve it and put it in the collection that I'm starting. And it's bigger. It's 20 by 26, so I can print 20 by 26 completely underneath that platen, which would be the biggest poster that I could possibly make.
I see. Gotcha.
And anything else I have is smaller than that. Even the new one I got, the print surface is I could put a chase in there that's 25 by 24, but you can't print on the whole surface. So that being said, this would be the biggest one I could print on.
Gotcha.
That's not the motivational factor as much as the idea of just the historical cool factor of it all, and the fact that it's affordable. Like I said, it's affordable. In the after show, I'll tell you the prices. I don't want to say it out loud because I don't know if the gentleman's listening. Nice guy, but we're going to talk tomorrow.
Cool.
Anyway, so that's exciting. And then the other real exciting thing is that yesterday I went back over to the ghost house, or the graveyard house, with Mike, and we cleaned up the grounds. And the stonemason started working as soon as the weather broke, so the foundation is slowly getting closed up. If you see my Instagram today, you'll see some of those pictures. And I'm going to do a reel. I'll post a reel by the end of the day of a little bit of progress of the house, because so many people are asking. So I want to just do a reel that just kind of sums up where we're at. And it's exciting. I got one complete wall in, and I'm so excited. At the end of the day last night, I was just like, I looked back and I was like, I propped this roof up for 10 months and I didn't drop it. That was my biggest fear, is that I was going to drop the roof.
Yeah.
I was going to lose handle on keeping that roof in the air. We dug out, put a foundation underneath this whole thing, put drainage, ripped out everything, put everything back, and I didn't drop the roof. The whole entire time with just like sticks and rocks, I've been able to keep the roof in the air. I had somebody saying, oh, you need to build a steel frame, make like three big steel H frames, and so you have plenty of room to work. And bit by bit, I was able to put it in there. And the whole time, the guy's using the excavator and Mike, and everybody's like scratching their head going, okay, all right, whatever, all right. You know, like, this isn't the greatest idea, but it was just, all right, you're in charge, your money. It's your money. You know, I hear that a lot. It's your money. And, looking back last night and just looking at the pictures and going, I am totally safe. Nothing's going to fall. The roof is there. It's up. Now we're just tweaking the foundation, which obviously isn't. I'm doing a stone stack foundation in the way Ken, the stone guy, likes to work. We put our rim joist in, and he likes to stone stack right up to it. So then we're going to lift it up like one half of an inch with some pry bars and stuff. And then he's going to put like cement in the last few stones in and then settle the foundation onto that. And so that's a learning curve that it's fun to watch Ken do his work. So there, that's it. That's my update. And yeah. Then this week's video, I'm going to start working on a Maloof style stool. I'm working with Double H Boots, and they have a showroom. They said a lot of guitar players come and hang out in the showroom. They have kind of like a rock and roll atmosphere. And they said, maybe you could make us a guitar stool, so when people come, they could sit on the stool and play guitar. So I got inspired to make it like a Maloof style stool. All walnut, sculpted, carved. Very organic looking. So I'm going to do that. And then the top of the seat will have some of the logo branding carved into it. By hand, I'm thinking. Potentially. If I run out of time, I'll just throw it in the laser.
See how it goes. One of your I was recording an ad spot for the Woodworkers Guild of America, and I was grabbing.
Oh, you did the one too?
Yeah, that's coming out tomorrow. Oh, cool. And the funny thing is, like, I have a DVD set from the Woodworkers Guild of America from like 12, 13 years ago or whatever. So I talk about that. I'm like, I've been, you know, this is how I started my woodworking journey, and I'm gathering screenshot footage of their website for my video spot, my ad read, and there's some basic techniques, basic table saw techniques that I'm using, and then George is the host, and then I'm like, okay, I need some advanced stuff too, so to appeal to that people. And then there's Jimmy Duresta cutting circles on a table saw. So you're in my video for a brief second.
Oh, cool. You know what? I cut my spot, and I apologize to everybody that's watched that spot. I cut my spot, and I left it long, and I sent it to them. I'm like, do you guys – I figured they were going to want to make me edit it anyway, so I just left it long. And I sent it, and in about 10 minutes, I got back. This is perfect. Thank you. Huh. Good to go. And I'm like, I wanted you to edit it down a little bit. I wanted you to tell me what to take out.
Yeah.
And they're like, perfect. So – that's it. That's why it feels a little, it's like a little sluggish, my spot. So I'm sorry about that.
It's all good.
They proved it that way.
It's all relevant though. I mean, it's a woodworking ad in a woodworking video. So it's all good.
Yeah. When you think about it, if you made a video, if you made an ad read and you made it 5 minutes long, the client would look at it and go, that's great. We love it.
Right. Oh yeah. The more the better.
The more the better. Then even though they know most people, they think everyone's going to watch it. But yeah.
Cool. That's it. Well, for me, I've been building. This week I started building the kind of clean room in the shop. And so the walls are actually up, which is pretty cool to see. And I'm pretty happy with, you know, I was kind of back and forth on, it seems like a good idea, but there's this unknown about building walls and separating my shop into a smaller space. And so, I was, you know, part of the back of my head, I was like, I don't know, maybe this is a bad idea. I'm not really sure. But I got the walls framed up in place and can stand back and look at it, and I'm like, oh yeah, this is gonna look good. And then you go inside this room and I'm like, oh wow, this room's pretty big, you know, so I think it's gonna work out pretty well. The problem though is that I bit off way more than I can chew in 2 weeks for this video. So kind of trying to figure out what I can do about that. You need, you know, the when you make a video, you have to have the kind of like payoff at the end. But if I try to get to that payoff in the amount of time that I usually give myself, then I'm going to have to skip over some stuff, which is what I don't really like to do. And so I'm not really sure how to, and even if I did skip over stuff, it's still a lot of work. It's like framing walls, putting in a drop ceiling, running electrical, which I'm not going to show, but, you know, I still have to do that work. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, painting the inside of it, and adding lights and adding all the stuff and getting all the stuff up and running. And I've got big plans for what the room is going to be, all the things that are going to be in there. But now I'm trying to figure out kind of like what the minimum viable product is for the room.
Is there a video within the video, like a particular thing that you did while making this video that could be its own, and you put that out first to give yourself more time to do the bigger picture thing?
I think there probably is, but the context won't be there. Mm. I thought about that. Like, so there's a window. I'm putting in a window that goes front in this room looking into the shop or from the shop, so that it's big. And it's like not a square rectangle window. It's curvy, and it has this kind of trapezoid shape with curvy corners and stuff. And it's the plan with that is that it's going to be edge-lit acrylic window with like etching on it, so I can use it as a status indicator for, you know, driven by an Arduino, which is like super cool, but I can't put all that in the video. But then if I make a video about that specifically, it will be in a place that doesn't exist yet from the viewer's perspective. So I'm not really sure.
Like, oh, I see.
How to do that.
Yeah.
So, but then if I, yeah, if I don't talk about that, then I'm missing an opportunity to make a cool video about this like indicator window, this like status window thing, which is really cool. So yeah, I don't know. I'm excited about the work, but it is a lot of work, and I don't know how I can get it done in time. And I have been building in margin for myself. So like this is the third video right now that is not out yet. So I've got time that I can make it, you know, I can eat into it, that time a little bit. But then that just gets rid of my margin. My vacation this summer is going to need margin, you know, stuff like that. So I'm just trying to like juggle how much work I can put into a single video and make it worthwhile, and how much I should split it. And then, you know, just the not to be complainy, but just as a relative point to that, and you guys have felt this too, I'm sure, is like when you have videos for a while that you put a lot of work, you put the same amount of work into good videos and bad videos, performance wise. And so when you have a few that you've put in a lot of work on and they don't do great, it makes it kind of hard to want to put in a whole lot of work into the next one when you, the trend is that it's not really going to do great. It's still a lot of work to make a video. Even if the video is good, it just doesn't get shown. And so there's a little bit of that creeping in too. And I don't want to have to, you know, like consider that. And I don't want to have to shortchange videos because like, well, it's probably not going to do well anyway, because with that attitude, of course it's not going to do well. Right. So I don't want to do that, but I have to be honest and think that there is a little bit of that creeping in, you know, when you have things that don't really perform for a while.
Yeah.
You have to take it into consideration about the amount of work you're putting into something. And then that, thinking through that and trying to like temper that feeling and not let that become too big of a thing, it got me thinking more about the whole thumbnail and title thing. And we weren't planning on talking about this today, but it has been on my mind, so I thought I would ask you guys. The thumbnail and title, everybody knows now, is like the biggest thing for a YouTube
video.
Make or
break you.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
And I don't know if this is, I don't know if this is true or not. So this might be my own personal good, bad, I don't know. I feel like the videos that we make are good videos. I feel like they are entertaining whether you're planning on making the thing or not. I feel like they don't get shown enough to the people who might enjoy them. And I think that's because of our titles and thumbnails are just not, they're just not there. They're not hooky enough. They're not catchy enough. They're not the thing that people, you know, viewers have a lot of decisions to make and they have a lot of content to wade through and choose the things that they want. And so I don't think we do a great job of ranking high enough in that like choosing process for them. But yeah. So I think that's the truth, all of that. But I don't want to come up with titles and thumbnails. It's not something I'm good at. It's not something that I want. A lot of people love that game and they love the like strategy of it and stuff. And I think that's great. It's not how I work and it's not, I'm just not good at it. You know, I wish I was, I wish I wanted to be good at it, but I kind of don't care to be good at it. And so well, I was like, actually curious.
I had this rationale, like I made a wooden bucket. I challenged myself to make a wooden bucket. So I thought to myself, a wooden bucket. It's not as simple as it looks. And that's what I made the title of my video. I'm not saying it's the best title.
Yeah.
And then what am I going to make a picture of? A pile of wood? So yeah. I put a picture of the finished bucket. And this is what I've always done. I put a picture of the finished thing. And then you know, Drew's helped me over the last year a little bit. And I don't want to overload him with a million questions, so I don't bug him as much as I probably should.
Same.
But at the end of the day, we all don't want to bother him. Like he's like become like the thumbnail guru. But what else is there? You make this is a video about me making this thing that's in the picture. I can't make a picture of me holding my cheeks with my mouth open like a piece of wood fell on the floor because it wasn't that big of a deal.
Yeah.
And it seems disingenuous to like make it seem like I almost didn't make it.
Right.
Like,
to sensationalize it for the sake thing. Of yeah.
Taking I made this simple. Simple thing and it wasn't that it was more complicated than I thought, but I did it.
Yeah.
It's like okay.
And there are ways, you know, I mean like Drew is really good. There's a lot of people that are really good at taking a simple thing and coming up with a clever way to make it interesting. And it's not disingenuous. It's marketing. Mm. It's clever marketing.
Yeah.
I'm not a marketer. Yeah. I don't want to be a marketer. And there's this weird tension with that I have felt for a long time, and I'm confronted with it now. I want to be able to make things and let somebody else market it, but I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to let somebody else make up titles and thumbnails, or if there's even anybody that would do that. I mean, I know you can hire people to do thumbnails for you, but I don't want to look like Mr. Beast. I don't want to look like, I don't want that kind of thumbnail. I want interesting, like photographic, artistic, interesting thumbnails. And I don't know if there's somebody that does that or not, you know? And so anyway, these things have all kind of stacked up like, yeah, we're kind of ahead, but the last few videos, not really done that great. How do I get them to do great? Oh, I have to work on the titles and thumbnails. Well, how do I do that when I'm also trying to build a room that's going to take way more time than I thought it was going to take? So, you know, they're kind of compounding ideas. And so I guess all of that was to just get to asking you guys, have you thought about trying to find someone to either coach you on those title and thumbnail things or to do them for you or to... Like, how do you deal with that?
I talked to Drew a little bit here and there. I don't want to bother him and ask him to keep coming up with my thumbnails and titles.
Yeah, Drew, just so you know, this is us subtly saying that we don't want to bother you, but we really want you to. Okay. Just throw that out there. You're listening. I know you're listening, so I'm just going to say it out loud.
But
go ahead.
I'm just settling into the fact I told you guys I stopped looking at the analytics a couple weeks ago. Like, even Drew's asking me, he's like, how are your videos doing? I was like, I'm not looking because it's not gonna change anything.
I'm okay, here to make cool stuff. Can I interrupt you right there?
And be yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I love that feeling. I love that idea, but it doesn't work. That doesn't work because it doesn't work to not look at the analytics. We make a living with this stuff. I would love to say, screw the analytics. Be an artist. Make everything you want, and you'll find your audience. And I think that's ideal.
Yeah,
but like we got bills to pay. You know, we can't.
I don't know.
That's
the reason
me.
I stopped looking at
I'm
the
putting
analytics.
That on
yeah,
you.
I Go stopped ahead. Looking at the analytics because it's been a year. I can't figure out how to turn the ship.
Yeah.
You know, when you look like when I peaked in 2018 and I was like making, I was adding tons of subscribers and I was getting tons and tons and tons of views. I was getting like 5 to 7 million views a month. Now I can't even break 1 million views a month. And I don't know what to do to change it. I think the content I'm making is good. I personally believe it's as good, if not better, than what I was making back then. Mm-hmm. But Jocko hit me with like a little bit of truth. He's like, you're not as relatable as you used to be. Now everybody thinks you're a millionaire and you got all the tools in the world. You're not as relatable. Mm-hmm. Jocko said that to me and it was a bit of a gut punch. But I'm like, I'm evolving. I've evolved into the person I wanted to be the day I graduated college. And I'm okay with this. And some people are coming along for the ride. And if they want to come along for the ride, I feel like I'm still that guy in the Lower East Side scrapping and trying to figure things out. I just have more room, you know?
Yeah, right.
But, you know, when Jocko said that, he's right. He's like, I'm not as relatable. So I got to keep coming up with new fun things that now I'm basically I'm a rich teacher on YouTube, right? Is that what I am? If I'm a rich teacher on YouTube, let me be the rich teacher on YouTube. I'm not as relatable. But, you know, I always say, I'm going to make stuff with things that people don't have. That's fine. We watch racing. We watch skateboarding. We watch Formula One. I'm never going to own a $2 million race car.
Yeah.
But I watch Formula One racing. So the idea of us being able to like be exactly relatable to the exact person that's going to do exactly what I do. People watch Hollywood movies that cost $50 million to make. Does that mean it's relatable or it's not relatable?
Yeah. You know? I think that
I think it's a vague notion in general.
The thing was that we were relatable. Hollywood movies have never been relatable. F1 racing has never been relatable.
But we were,
and now we're not. And I can say that for myself as well. You know, I recognize and I've accepted that I'm not relatable to a lot of people anymore. That's okay. But I still want to figure out how to make that sustainable for my family, right? You know, so anyway, with the title thumbnail thing, David, do you have thoughts? You just sent me a video.
Yeah. So, okay, so I do enjoy the game, but I don't love the game, right? I haven't figured it out. It's so hard. It is the
what? That's it.
Right.
Show's over.
Right. The packaging for YouTube videos is it's the hardest thing to do. It's harder than coming up with brilliant ideas. It really is because it makes or break a video. I got thumbnails visually that I'm not proud of, but those videos have done so well. And even just recently, I did the tambour joint thing video, and I hate the thumbnail. It's so plain and boring, and it doesn't represent me as an artist. But that video did so well. And then the next video I did a vacuum press video and I'm holding up a little wine pump saying this is my favorite clamp. That video has just started to take off a couple weeks later. Now that video is doing really well. And it's not like, and it's not even representative of what I want to be as a YouTuber, because in the tambour joint video, the thumbnail and the title and the beginning part of the video is about this crazy joint, which is amazing. But then I made this piece of furniture with it that I absolutely love. And that's what I really wanted to show in the thumbnail. And that was the first version of that thumbnail, but it didn't work. And then the next video is my favorite clamp, which is this, I'm showing this wine pump. And that video is really taken off. But the payoff is me making 10 skateboards. But I don't even mention the skateboards, the art skateboards that I made in the video.
Right.
Because it's about the thing. It's trying to get people to watch. And I haven't figured it out. It's a long way of saying I have not figured it out. Sometimes I enjoy the game. Sometimes I hate the game. I go back and forth. The video that I just sent you, this guy's he's a consultant. I watch a lot of consultant videos. I've taken a couple courses from some big names like Daryl Eves and Patty Galloway, and it all helps. And then a few weeks ago, I kind of came to the realization that sometimes I want to make videos that I know that aren't going to perform well because it makes me feel better about what I do. And so it's I have to go back and forth, and I want to make sure that I'm really loving what I'm doing so I can keep doing this, but I also have to make these videos to get people to watch. So I'm trying to trick myself, and not trick myself, but just trying to figure out what's the hook in the video that I can please both sides of it. I haven't figured it out. What I'm trying to say is I haven't figured it out, and I'm never going to, and that's going to be okay. It's all going to be okay. Dang it.
That's why I give up on looking at the analytics, because what I do is make cool things.
Yeah.
And at least I make cool things for myself, right? I make things that I feel are cool, and the processes of me learning how to do these things. And I've changed. We talked a little bit about reinventing ourselves, and maybe that was going to be the topic today. Is that what it was going to be? Oh, coasting. The idea that we're going to hit the slipstream and coast. We're going to get that spot where we just kept money, just keeps pouring in, and then we're just going to coast. And we talked before we started how that never happens. You know, because when Jelly Smack was the thing, and a lot of creators, including myself, were making a lot of money a month, but it only lasted several months, and then it died off. And but when that first big check came in, I was like, this is it. This is it. I can literally give the middle finger to half the people I have to deal with in a day, because this is it. I don't have to worry about it. I can just do my thing. And then checks diminish, and now there's nothing, and then it's back to zero, and then you're like, oh, now I'm glad I didn't give the middle finger to half the people I don't want to deal with, because now I have to deal with them in a day and ask them for money and work and jobs. I do a lot of work behind the camera behind the scenes that doesn't necessarily make it to YouTube. But this work I don't want to do. You know, I mean, I still work for the liquor companies. I love those guys. They're the best clients in the whole world. I have a big job coming. I'll tell them the after show, which hopefully they gave me one price, and I basically gave them a double on that price. Like, let me go back. And then they came back the other day and said, looks like we can do that. I said, great. I'll tell you after. But there's never a moment where we can coast. When you look back at my personal trajectory, where I started in the Lower East Side, and then Jocko says, you're unrelatable. I obviously made a lot more money in the last couple of years, but I was making a ton of money in the city. I was making a lot of money in the city doing all client work. But I was constantly on the hamster wheel of making sure that work. Now I can coast a little bit here and there, but I can't keep coasting. I have to constantly keep fanning, the flames and making sure advertisers come in, and the advertisers that come in, I'm like, maybe I don't want to do a video game ad, but you know what? Let me look at it, because they always pay a lot. It's kind of, they're like drug dealers. It's like, here you go. This is $20,000. All you got to do is talk about a stupid game that you're never going to play. Thank you to Sean Beckner the other day. He posted it for me. He's like, when I see a film, a struggling filmmaker, I'm paraphrasing, when I see a filmmaker making a video with an ad in it, I watch the ad, because that's how the filmmaker is able to make his films. And so thank you, Sean, for that. It was really, really, really nice of you to say that and publicize that. And so I reposted that. So it's, I don't know. I kind of lost
my train. Well, a couple things.
Bottom line is there's no easy way to coast. And if I look at my future, my trajectory, I'm just sticking to what I can do. I can make cool things. I can't come up with the best title. I can't come up with the best image. But people who know that when they watch this video, there's going to be a couple of pearls in it that they can go home and improve their own personal stuff.
Yeah.
Whether I'm rich, poor, whether I'm working on a machine that no one's ever going to touch. Somebody might see that machine and go, I want one of those. I'm going to work to get to that machine. And then they come to me in a year from now and say, you know what? I was in this bad job. You have this $10,000 machine. And I said, I want that machine. So I worked to get that machine. Thank you for showing me that there's more to life than just a shop with grandpa's tools. And so that's what I'm sticking to.
There's if you step back and you look at the whole picture, when things first started taking off for us, there was a lot of growth all at one time. And it just feels amazing. Like, I'm able to quit my job. I get to do this crazy thing for a living. This is absolutely amazing. But that growth eventually has to taper off. There's only, a certain pool of people who are going to watch your videos. And it's a huge pool, and you're never going to reach the full potential. But it always feels like I want that feeling again of that tremendous growth. That's not going to happen anymore, or maybe it will, but It's we're always in the moment. We always think, oh, there should always be growth. We should always be trying to figure out how to make more money, how to get more views, how to become a better designer, a better furniture maker, and more tools. Like I think anybody who runs their own business is always in the mindset of, how do I get bigger and better?
More, bigger, better.
Yeah.
And that really messes with your brain. And as far as coasting, I think for me, I like the idea of coasting more than I would actually appreciate coasting, because I think a lot of creative work and good art comes from a little bit of a struggle, a little bit of a, I got to push myself more, right?
So I have a bunch of thoughts.
In New York, New York, there's a graffiti called Comfort Equals Death.
Yes.
I think it's the name of the band. Comfort Equals Death. It's a graffiti you see around the city for like the last 40 years. It's a wine glass upside down with like an X in it. And that means comfort equals death, basically. Mm. Once you get comfortable, you'll die. But go ahead, Bob.
Interesting. All right. So I have several thoughts in regard to all that stuff. First is separation of concerns. So when in programming, when you do software development, you have to end up with a good product, you have to decide to split things apart into logical pathways, into logical functions, so that this thing over here does one thing well. This thing over here does one thing well. And you never start that way, but you end up getting to that because that makes things sustainable. Now, we don't really do that when we start creating content. We do all of it. It's the startup mentality of like, we do everything. We make the thumbnail, we design the thing, we build the thing, we shoot the video, we edit the video, we make all of it. And so as you go along, you start to get help maybe with some of those things, and you have to decide when and what you get help with, right? I've accepted the fact that I'm not a great graphic designer, and I get help with that. Forby has been with me since the very beginning, and he's an amazing designer, and he does all of that stuff because I know that he can do that stuff better than I can. I think titles and thumbnails, I might be getting to a point to where I'm recognizing that that might be better produced in somebody else's hands, somebody other than he and I, because he and I work on that really well together, but it's a struggle for both of us. And I wonder, this is me wondering out loud, if there's somebody that can take that to do it better for me so that I don't have to try to struggle with 10% of my work that makes 90% of my work less enjoyable. Yeah. Because that is the truth.
Yeah.
I'm struggling with that 10%. And this is not meant to be a complaint. This is me
figuring things out.
I want to do this.
Yeah.
I want this to work.
Yeah.
I want to sustain this business. So that's what I'm saying. This is not me like, boo-hoo, I got to make a thumbnail. That's not my point. So separation of concerns, I think it might be worthwhile to look at letting somebody who's really good at something do it in lieu of me struggling with it. So that's one thing. Second thing is in regard to the growth thing that you were talking about. I learned in a very big way this last year that fruit requires seasons. Fruit does not grow on trees all year long. Fruit grows on trees one season a year, and for that fruit to grow again the next year, it requires a winter where the thing dies. Everything falls off. It shuts down. Everything gets replenished. It starts to get new nutrients. It starts to bloom. It builds new fruit. That's how it works. That's how nature works. And we are no different. We cannot be on an upward trajectory in everything in our life all the time. That's not nature. That's not how it works. Mm-hmm. And accepting that has been pretty big for me, because when I have a low or a hard, I'm like, cool, I'm in winter right now. And after winter, there's spring. You know, there's something to look forward to. This is a step towards something else. Different kind of fruit, different season of life. It requires seasons. And that has been very big for me. So the growth that we all saw is gone. But that doesn't mean that there's not another new fruit on the other side of this like valley that we may be finding ourselves in, or that we will find ourselves in next year. The other thing, last thing, and then I'll shut up, is you're talking about the coasting thing. And that was what we were originally going to talk about, was like, we all naturally, I think, in some way, or well, for me, again, I naturally want to find a way to coast a little bit, but I don't want to not work. I don't want to not create. And I think it is more akin to running. So when you become a runner, when you start trying to get healthy, you're like, speed. I gotta do speed. That's how I'm gonna lose weight. That's how I'm gonna become a runner. And you sprint, and you start sprinting. And then eventually you notice that, man, my knees hurt, so I should probably not sprint. I should learn how to do a little bit longer distances so that my heart is healthy, not my legs as much. And so it changes from sprinting to distance. And then eventually you were like, yeah, I could do more distance. And you have to change your pace at which you're running to be able to do more distance. And I don't think it's that I want to coast, as in I want to sit down on the couch and just make money and live the rest of my life. But I have to recognize that I stopped sprinting a long time ago. And I slowed down a little bit. And I'm doing it longer. And I have to change the pace at which I work and the goals that I'm trying to accomplish. It's not about winning the race. It's not about being the fastest one. It's not even about covering a big distance anymore. It's about being able to do it as long as possible. And this is, I'm talking about like life, not necessarily YouTube. It's about sustainability and about like, how am I going to be able to continue to live the life that I want to live long term? That means I have to change the way that I do things. I had to slow down my videos. I had to change the structure of my team. I had to choose not to buy all the things that I would love to buy and sell things that I don't use anymore. And there's all these things that have to change so that I can continue to run at a new pace that I'm running at. And I think the title thumbnail struggle thing, to kind of pull it back around, is one of those, it's one of those things that I'm finding is making it really frustrating to run. And if I can, instead of wearing these stupid old shoes that I've worn for several years, get some new shoes, let somebody else do the thing and enjoy running. You know, that's kind of like what I'm landing at is like, I enjoy a very specific thing and I'm good at it. I think I want to do that. And I don't want to try to do everything else. And I don't want to try to be a social media person. And I don't want to try, you know, I want to make stuff.
And I'm sure you guys get these emails of like, hey, I'm your title thumbnail guy. And then they'll they're just random emails. And then they show you their portfolio. And it's like the crazy rainbow colors and contrast. And like, no, that is not my audience. Like, if I did those things, that would not appeal to my audience. I would actually lose viewers. So I'm sure there are people who are experts, and I'm sure there's somebody out there who is perfect for you, but that particular person is harder to find because you are not marketing to teenagers. You're marketing to, you know, people in our circle. People in our circle don't want the super Mr. Beast-y stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, you know, what the thumbnail style or title or hook or that, I don't know, there's got to be a word for that. Whatever that hook thing is, that thing that gets somebody's attention, it changes, right? Even within our audience, our dedicated, we love you audience, it's still going to change. Yeah. Their appetite changes. And so it is chasing a moving target a bit. But I think when it comes to paying attention to where the target moved, that's a skill set. That's like amount of effort that, like, I'm not motivated to make.
It's like being a programmer.
And I'm not.
You can't just learn a programming language and then stop learning. You have to keep learning as it evolves. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. So I think there's other people out there that have the appetite for watching that target and adjusting to where that target is moving at any given time. And I don't know. I don't have a point other than just to voice my frustration with it. And like, I want it to be better. I want it to be well done. And I don't think I'm equipped to do it well. So I guess anybody who's not going to make Mr. Beast thumbnails, and titles and doesn't want to like lie to audiences, but you can make good thumbnails, give me a call. If that one very specific person is out there,
right,
let me know.
And then once you hire that person, I'm also going to hire them as well. So
okay, yeah. I mean they could get full time work for sure.
Yeah,
like between all of us, yeah. You know. In regards to the coasting thing, though, I have thought a lot about this, about you know what it looks like as we get older and choose how much we work and how we continue to make money. You know, and not to like become wealthy, but just how do we make a living as we get older, age out of the YouTube thing, and just want to have more margin in our life. And I don't know that that's coasting as much as it is just adjusting our needs financially and adjusting where we put our effort. And I think for me, putting effort into creating videos at a certain pace for a really long time finally caught up with me. And so now I'm just trying to adjust for what the next several years looks like, you know, as I still want to make a living, but I got to be able to do it differently. So, but Jimmy, you're looking to like just turn off all the cameras and live on a farm and make your stuff that nobody sees, right? Is that your goal?
What's my long-term goal is, well, Howard has always said it. He said, my goal is for you to make videos because you want to, not because you had to.
That would be awesome. And,
you know, that's always the goal. And so with that mindset involved, every once in a while I throw an ad in because it's good money and it pays the bills. But in general, I make the things that I really want to learn about. For instance, the barrel. And, you know, this year, I haven't really been explicit about it, but this year it's been about challenging myself, doing a few things that I otherwise would more take a comfortable route. You know, I'm not on the hamster wheel of a video a week. I'm not doing a video this week. I'm going to take some time and do this stool for Double H Boots. It's Carolina Double H Boots. I'm going to do that. Take some time to do that. Long-term projects like the house and the barn and a few other projects around here. I'm going to start working on a new truck soon. I'm looking for a new car restoration. I have a couple of cars in mind. I've always wanted a Woody, but they're impossible to find. And I really want to just do the things that inspire me that will infectiously inspire other people. That's really kind of the goal. And my goal has never been to make something that somebody at home can make exactly the same way. And that's why I've never been good with plans. I've never been able to sell plans because people see me freestyling something and then the plans are reverse engineered based off of that. And then they're like, I don't know why. I'm just bad with plans. Maybe it's just I'm bad at marketing plans because my whole thing is like, I just think of it as I go. And when it comes to thumbnails and view counts and stuff, I honestly believe that the stuff I'm making, whether it gets 1,000 views now, over its lifetime will get millions of views. And I like to just continuously make evergreen content that isn't necessarily attached to any real current events outside of my own personal learning. And I think we have a life, videos will have a life on YouTube as a start, but as platforms change and tastes change, now we're going with Facebook. Voov is behind the scenes putting everybody's content on Facebook, and that's going to have a life, and we'll get some earnings there. I truly believe that there's more to come, that this library will be utilized over and over again. Every once in a while, some of my highest viewed videos are videos I made 10 years ago. Hmm. Every once in a while. And videos that aren't performing well now will perform later and do well. You know, it's really also the legacy of the education I provide. And you know, there's a lot to that, too. I'm excited to continuously add bricks to that wall and books to that library with each video that I'm proud of.
That's a good way to
look. I'd rather be more proud of the videos I put out than, you know, trying to chase money. Because, I mean, I guess I'm fortunate in the way that I can make some phone calls and just get money fabricating stuff. Hmm. And there's always loose royalty deals going on in the background. I could tell you about I don't know if I should talk about that. I probably can't talk about that. Never mind that. Edit that up. No, there's a royalty thing going on. Once it gets more traction, I'll tell everybody. So yeah, I just, and I'm always looking for other ways to create income, opportunities here and there. And,
yeah.
But who knows? Just try and keep your eyes open and just your creativity sharp and fun and unique and interesting for you.
I'm currently listening to this book called, I think it's called Oversubscribed, and the author mentions this furniture maker named David Boucher, and I never heard of him, and I looked it up, and he's an older gentleman, but he makes insanely high-end furniture where, like, a table or a cabinet as a single piece sells for hundreds of thousands of dollars. So his, like, clientele is, like, super rich. And I'm not even a fan of the style of furniture. It's a little bit too busy for me. But I was like, what? That's coasting for me is, maybe that's a form of coasting for me way in the future. As I'm older, maybe I can make high-end furniture for other people. Just, you know, that one project that you work on for 6 months, but then pays your year salary. That sounds absolutely amazing. I don't know that I'll ever get there, but that could be a form of coasting for me in the future. And everything that I'm doing now is just building up to get those skills to do that when I'm older.
I think similarly to that, I keep going back to, like, the product thing, that I feel like I've built up enough skill and understanding of problem solving that I should be able to create a product that solves a problem for people, that makes something easier. I feel like I've got all of the stuff around this little empty spot, and I just don't know what goes in that empty
spot. So close. You're so close.
It's like, it's probably just a matter of time before everything just goes, oh, it's there. Like, I got it. All of my, our powers combined, you know, and it's like, right, I got it. And then that can be something that can, like you're talking about the expensive pieces, that idea can be something that can fund long-term, now I get to just be creative with no, you know, like, no risk and no, like, having to hamster wheel it. I don't know. Maybe I won't ever get there. But I think that probably is my long-term, you know, I have to solve that problem. I have to find that problem, and I have to solve that problem. But anyway, any other thoughts on this winding road of a topic we've had?
I say it. I enjoy just doing what I'm really learning at and having fun, and I think the tides will shift eventually. You know, every 20 years, things come back into fashion. So I'm waiting till 2028. It'll be 10 years after my peak. I think I'm going to come back. So 28. Everything's going to be great again. No, everything's great now. I'm just, like, when I look, I made that barrel. I've been wanting to make a wooden barrel like that for years. And every time I see them in antique stores, I'm like, I could make that, but I'm afraid of the angles. It's always what I said to myself, I'm afraid of the angles. But now that I have the capabilities of blacksmithing and I'm able to combine the disciplines I'm starting to learn more and more about, there's a certain sense of freedom. Like, I sent you guys pictures of that print press, and I was discussing with the guy, and you'll see the one that I sent. I don't know, maybe I'll Instagram this. The one that I own is missing 30% of the parts that are, I'll never in a million years find those parts. They're not going to be on eBay. They're not going to be anywhere. It's one of these things that they're gone forever to history. I'm going to just have to make them from scratch. And I can. There's no way I can't make the rest of that machine by myself with everything I have. And, you know, that sense of freedom is really becoming more and more of, like, is more and more reality. Yesterday, I was driving in traffic. This is funny. I was driving in traffic. My truck that I bought in 2023, big truck, huge mirrors. The same truck was coming at me on this skinny country road, and boom, we hit mirrors. My mirror slapped shut. His mirror slapped shut. This is at 7 in the morning yesterday. I put my car in reverse. He puts his car in reverse. We back up to each other. And I go, do you have the same truck as me? He goes, I think so. And we're like both looking and like, cool. I go, is my mirror broken? He goes, I don't see anything. And I go, yours has a little crack on it. He goes, all right. He goes, I don't care if you don't care. I said, I'm cool. And we fist bumped and we drove away. This was yesterday morning.
What? Wow.
And I got home and I looked
his
at my mirror.
His name was Timmy the Resta.
And I looked at my mirror. My mirror has a big chip in it. Like, you know, all new cars now have like a blinker on the mirror. So the blinker light on the mirror was chipped. There's a big chip missing out of it. And I'm like, I'm going to go to Chevy. They're probably going to charge me for a whole new side mirror instead of just because there's one little piece of plastic missing. But I have the ability to fill in that chip of plastic, wet sand it, polish and grind it in so it looks like it's fairly not there. And I'm like, I can fix that. That's a sense of freedom that most people don't have.
Yeah.
I'm going to fix it. And maybe I'll make it into a reel. Maybe I'll just fix it and not say anything. But the idea that the sense of freedom I feel now at this age in my life is I can fix and make anything I want. I don't have to wait for somebody else. I don't have to. The other day, Rachel and I were talking. She's like, you know what you need? You need a piece of music to go with your, you know, because I keep using this catch-up song from Apple. She's like, I'm sick of hearing that in every one of your videos. You got to get somebody to write a piece of music for you. And I'm like, I'm thinking to myself, like having to deal with a musician and being like, no, make it a little of this. I'm like, I'll make my own music. I'll just figure it out myself. I only need is like a 30-second loop.
Yep.
I'll download the keyboard app or something and I'll figure it out. I'll make my own piece of music.
First step is to buy a new computer that is your GarageBand computer. And then you...
So even though we're complaining about algorithms and all this other stuff, the sense of freedom I feel right now is unbelievable. And, you know, we all should have that sense of freedom. We're all able-bodied, which is obviously one of the most important things. We're all healthy, thank God. You know, there's been some people in this community that we lost, like Aaron and some other people. And, you know, as long as you're on the right side of the grass and you can do stuff. You know, the amount of skills and knowledge that we've all amassed in the last 10 years is unbelievable. And the audience that follows and participates, the amount of knowledge is unbelievable, the amount of knowledge we share. I remember a time when it was all a secret.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. Like the people in our circle, when I say our circle, the people who watch making videos, like the amount of knowledge we've all gained together just in the last 10 years has got to be, it's mind blowing. We've never had a shift like this in knowledge in human history. That's just bonkers. Yeah. Yeah. My final thought is, I 10 years from now, I'll probably look back in 2024 and think, "Dude, you were coasting. You were making what you wanted to do," but sometimes it really is hard to appreciate the moment. And I do understand how lucky I am. I am making art. I am making pieces of furniture that I love. And this is all great. And I'll probably look back at this time period and think, yeah, you were coasting. It feels like I'm working hard right now. But yeah, this is coasting.
Yeah.
There's something that I always have to remind myself is when you're in it, you feel like you're running through the sand. You know, you feel like you're walking in water and you when you're in it. But then when you look back and you think, like for instance, my own personal experience, I was in the city, I was in that sewer-ridden basement. I never thought I was going to be able to live upstate full-time. I was always going to have to be tied to my clients in the city. And now here it is, 7-8 years after I moved upstate. And I have absolutely zero interest in ever going back to the city. I don't even want to be near the city. I am so comfortable up here. But when I was down there and I thought of the leap to get up here and the amount of things I had to move and edit and get rid of stuff and deal with my landlords and it's all so behind me right now. So when you're in it, you feel like you're literally running through molasses. But when you look back, you're like, all I had to do is make that decision and confront it and get past it. That's it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, one of the reasons that we can do this show, one of the things that helps us sustain, and this is absolute sincerity, is the people on Patreon that support the show. Absolute sincerity. There is no marketing in that other than that's gratitude from all three of us towards those people for supporting the show and making it possible. We are very grateful for that because this is something that we can do that we enjoy. We get to have therapy together, and we get to talk, and we get to brainstorm, and we get to complain, and we get to do all these things. And it's because we have the support of the people on Patreon. So thank you for all of that. And the people that go above and beyond every week are the same, and they're awesome. That's Nick Ryan, Corey Ward, Albers Woodworks, Works by Solo, Chad from Mancrafting, Chad's Custom Creations, Rich at Low End Design, Odin Leather Goods, Sean Beckner, Scott at Dad It Yourself DIY, Jeff at the New Janky Workshop, sorry, Jeff, Warren Works, Michael Menegin, and Crabtree Creative. But also other people like Leopold. Leopold's on the list.
What's up, Leopold?
Leopold, thanks for the support. Yep. Appreciate it. Everybody over there at all different levels gets the after show, which apparently Jimmy has several secret things he's going to tell us. That's usually what goes in the after show. It's like extra secret, non-public, upcoming, that's the kind of stuff.
I forgot what I was going to say. I didn't write any of it down.
Great.
Did you remember? Give me some triggers to remember.
We'll hit the rewind button. And yeah, we'll try to figure it out. But after show is more podcast, separate podcast, us talking another 20 minutes or whatever. So if you want to get that, go over to patreon.com/makingit. Sign up at any level. And then in Patreon, right up there in the top, there's a little link to an RSS feed you can put in your podcast player, or you can listen on Patreon. We also do the after show in video on YouTube, so you get that link as well. So there's lots of options if you want to support the show. We had a lot of comments from different patrons this week, actually. Some people, Frag asked if we should have a Discord for this show for people to chat about episodes. Yeah, never really thought of that. Scallop Frito,
we had a Reddit at one point, didn't we?
That we did.
Probably faded.
Scallop Frito sent a message while we were recording asking if we had thought about doing a live show at Open Sauce, which we have not thought about that. But I also can't go because of scheduling conflicts, so unfortunately not. Anyway, we do get a lot of messages, and we try to, you know, I try to answer them and pass them along to the guys whenever you get those. So big thanks to everybody over on Patreon. Do you guys have anything to recommend this week?
Yes.
Go ahead, Dave.
The YouTube channel for Popular Science. The YouTube channel's probably a lot smaller than what you might think. They only have 91,000 subscribers. And I'm going to call him my buddy. My buddy Kevin Lieber from Vsauce 2 is one of the new hosts over there. And they are making fantastic videos. He hosted a video called Why Do We Put Holes in Our Head? And it goes through the whole history of cutting holes in people's heads and where it started and where we're at now. And they put out a video yesterday where Kevin was one of the hosts, and it was the first amputee reattachment. So this kid lost his arm in a weird train accident, and these doctors didn't know they were going to be the first. They just, everything just kind of happened all, like everything just kind of lined up in a perfect moment where, let's just try this, and it worked. And I don't know, they're just really good, well-produced videos. Popular Science.
Cool. Okay.
I'm going to talk about Cornelius. I don't know how to say his last name. Cornelius Queering. If you guys haven't seen him or found him on Instagram, he is a shirt clothing maker, and he's an incredible teacher, too. He shows every one of his Instagram posts is a tip on making shirts and making clothes and sewing, but from an expert that has years of experience, practical hands-on knowledge. So check out Cornelius. I just posted his Instagram to our chat.
Cool.
Every time he pops up, I think to myself, I got to take the time and just go through every one of his videos, because every one of them is knowledge on how to make clothes.
Cool. Mine is the video I mentioned earlier by Bo Miles called Get Over Yourself. And short story, he is beginning to burn out. He makes really interesting YouTube videos, kind of out there, all sorts of different stuff. But he basically goes fishing as a way to decompress. And then he's sitting talking to his camera as he's about to get in the water. And this guy pulls up in a car and says, Are you going to fish, or are you just going to take pictures of yourself? And you can see on his face, it like, he goes, ugh. And his response is, I'm a bit of a narcissist. And then it like sets this whole video in him reflecting on how making YouTube videos does give you a lot of opportunity to think about yourself way more than you should, and about prioritizing and all this. It's a very good video, but it got me thinking about a lot of the same stuff, because I have thought a lot about narcissism in regard to what we do and how I would honestly prefer not to be visible as much as I am, but I have to make myself be visible for what I do, and that makes me feel like I'm just trying to show myself off, you know. So there's this weird kind of back and forth. Anyway, it's a very good video, and he's got some other really interesting ones, does some pretty wild stuff, so go check out Bo. Leave him a comment. Give him a little pat on the back, too. I think he could use it. You guys got anything else? I'll take that as a no. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Love you guys.
Catch you next time.
Bye.